Welcome to Let's Talk Micro.
Hello, my dear audience. Welcome to another episode of Let's Talk Micro. As always, I hope you had a great week. And of course, you can always find Let's Talk Micro on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Good Pods, wherever you listen to podcasts, you can find Let's Talk Micro. As far as social media, I am on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and Blue Sky Social as Let's Talk Micro, on X as Let's Talk Micro 1, on LinkedIn as Luis Plaza, and I have an email address, which is letstalkmicro@outlook.com. So either via social media or via email, you can reach out with any questions, any feedback. They are always welcome and appreciated. So please go ahead and subscribe to the podcast, download episodes, and if the app allows you to do so, please go ahead and leave a review. Thank you so much for the support. And as I've said before, the Let's Talk Micro podcast does not have any sponsors. So if you want to support the podcast in any way, you can do so via a Venmo link or via Buy Me a Coffee, KOFI. Both links are available on the show notes. But if you're listening to this and you want to support in any way, if you're from the industry and you want to support the podcast, please contact me at letstalkmicro@gmail.com. As I said before, one of the challenges of the podcast is always, you know, make people aware of it and bring more content to engage more listeners. And that can be done via networking and via going to conferences. So if you want to support me in any way, please contact me at that email. I really love going to many conferences, but as you know, and I said this before, but the price, you know, it adds up, you know, it's a lot. So ideally, I would love to go to Microbe, ID Week, and many more, but that's not always a possibility. So bottom line, if you want to support the podcast, there are many ways to do it, either via those two links, or you can contact me via email. Okay, so, and if you're looking to learn more about antibiotics, please check out www.learnantibiotics.com and the Learn Antibiotics book available on Amazon. These resources include cheat sheets, practice tests, games, and more, and they are being used by thousands of people worldwide and may be helpful for you or your colleagues. And these are some great resources from Dr. Timothy Gauthier, a very passionate pharmacist. And if you haven't checked out the previous episode, please go ahead and do so. It was about Icanella. And this episode is part of the backbone of the podcast, which is where I break down all the organisms with biochemicals, media, and more. And this time I went over Icanella and I talked about Icanella corotans, which is the species that we typically isolate in the lab. And it was the only species of this genera for a long time. But I also go over some newly discovered species. And one of these newly discovered species, and they're not newly, they have been discovered in recent years. One of them, from my understanding, is saccharolytic, which can utilize carbohydrates, which is something that Icanella corotans cannot. But in the episode, I talk about media, I talk about the Gram stain, the biochemicals, I talk about the bleach melt, and I even go over the different organisms. I mention them, and I don't go into them in detail, but the HACCP group. And the organisms from the HACCP group, which is something that if you're going through a medical lab sciences program, you have to learn in your microbiology class. But these organisms, they are known for causing endocarditis. So, as I always say, check out this episode if you haven't already. Okay, so let's go ahead and move on to today's episode. And in today's episode, I have a guest. But as you know, every year, the CLSI M100, which I have referenced to many times in this podcast, released the 35th edition. And the CLSI, they always do a webinar to go over the changes. And I am including the link to it in the show notes, and this is mentioned in the podcast, but if your institution purchases a CLSI M100, it can come free with it. It comes free with it. If not, you can purchase it on the website. And I am also including the link to the free CLSI website where you can actually access the M100 and the M45 for free. But in this episode, Dr. April Bobinchik, and she was a guest back in 2023, where we did an intro episode about the CLSI. So she came back to the podcast to go over the changes, the updates, for this 35th edition, one of the major changes being, or updates let's say, is the breakpoints for Burkle Darya Sepatia Complex. So priorly, the breakpoints for this diffusion, they had been removed already, and now the MIC breakpoints were removed, so there are no breakpoints. So in the episode, April talks about this and you know, why were they removed, and she goes over recommendations for testing. And this is something that is going to bring a lot of questions. So I invite you to listen to this episode, check the webinar as well. And they are working on providing more information, which at some point they will post in the website about this. But besides this, you know, in the episode, she talks about the M45, which I asked, you know, when is it going to be updated? Since the latest update was in 2016. She goes over some updates in QC, you know, regarding QC. So, as I always like to say, all in all, such a great episode. I hope that this is of value and benefit to you, the audience. So let's go ahead and listen to it. Well, for all of you microbiologists out there, you know that the latest edition of the CLSI M100 is out already. Maybe you already listened to the webinar that the CLSI presented. Maybe you missed it, but I thought it would be a good idea to talk a little bit about the changes in this podcast. And today's guest, she was a guest back in 2023, where we did like a little bit of an intro about the CLSI M100. And today we're going to focus more on the changes. And her name is Dr. April Bobinchik. April, welcome to Let's Talk Micro.
Thank you. And thank you for having me on today's podcast. I'm happy to talk about the M100, one of my favorite things to talk about. I am the medical director of microbiology and virology at Penn State Hershey Medical Center in Hershey, PA. We are an academic medical center. We have both an adult hospital and pediatric hospital. We're located about 2 hours outside of Philadelphia. So we're considered rural Pennsylvania. So you can imagine that's like our patient population. I've also been a volunteer with CLSI for the last 10 years. I am a member of the antimicrobial subcommittee, as well as co-chair of Text and Tables Working Group. The Text and Tables Working Group is sort of the liaison working group in between our Breakpoint Working Group and our Method Working Group and the CLSI Subcommittee. And we liaison to the CLSI staff, which is responsible for publishing the M100. So we really kind of cover all the editorial content and make sure it's like scientifically and technically sound, and that we're capturing everything that was voted on in the meetings that then get into the document. So I have a lot of understanding and knowledge around the M100 document, especially the changes that are made. I'm also a member of the CLSI Outreach Working Group, and so we're responsible for educating all around CLSI standards, specifically the bacterial standards. So we talk about M100 and any new documents coming out. We offer, we produce newsletters, webinars, education programs, and so lots come out of the outreach working group. And so the M100 annual webinar is one of those programs that we put out each year.
Well, thank you again for taking the time and visiting us again to talk about this. That is so important. And you know, there's so much information, and then. You know, we get used to one, and then like the new one come out, and you know, like I didn't get a chance to check the webinar as we were talking before, but in preparation for this, like I started looking at the changes, and it seems like there's some significant ones in this edition. So thank you for that. And as I said to the audience, so for the webinar for the CLSI, there is a chance to if your institution, you know, purchase the CLSI, the webinar comes with it. And if not, I will provide some links, and you should be able to still, you know, purchase it if you want to listen to it as many times as you want, and of course with this episode as well. Okay, so as I said, we'll focus on the changes. So let's start with that. What are some of the new updates for this edition?
So one of the new changes or biggest changes that we made was the deletion of the Burkholderia sepatia complex MIC breakpoints in this edition. Last edition, we deleted the disc diffusion breakpoints, and this time we deleted the MIC breakpoints as well. We still maintained the table 2B3, which is the Burkholderia complex table that used to have the breakpoints in it. We have it in there because we wanted to convey to our users the important information of why the breakpoints were removed and what they can do now that they're gone. The main reason that they were removed was because there's been a lot of data and evidence that AST testing just did not correlate with clinical outcomes, especially in our CF patients where we most often isolate Burkholderia sepatia complex. And so there's been a lot of literature that, as well as the guidelines for CF societies, had indicated that they weren't really utilizing AST to predict clinical outcome. What's more troublesome is that we also isolate B sepatia complex from non-cystic fibrosis patients, such as patients who are immunocompromised and may have line infections or device infections with these sepatia complexes. And unfortunately, the literature on those clinical outcomes are not as there's not as much information on that. However, overall, it just didn't predict great clinical correlation to the susceptibility testing. When the ad hoc working group looked further into the data, they also found that the susceptibility testing that we were doing was not reproducible. And so we couldn't get the same results as repeated. Well, if you repeat the same test multiple times, you were getting different results. This was especially troublesome when comparing disc diffusion to broth microdilution, which is the reference method. The disc just did not correlate back well to the MIC breakpoints. And so that was the main reason why the disc diffusion was removed the first in 2024, because they had poor correlation to broth microdilution. A further study that was published in January of 2025 this year showed that also agar dilution, which is a reference method, didn't correlate well with broth microdilution either. They also looked at E-test or gradient diffusion, and that too did not correlate well with reference broth microdilution. So there was a real concern over the methods that they weren't reproducible, they weren't putting out results that we could actually rely on for clinical decision making. So what came out of that was the decision and the subcommittee vote to remove them from our document completely. This is not out of line with what UCAS does. They have not had clinical breakpoints for Burkholderia sepatia in several years. So this is in line with what other breakpoint setting institutions are also doing, or organizations are also doing. What we are recommending is that reference broth microdilution, which is frozen panels. So a lot of times we think of broth microdilution as sort of our lyophilized trays like SensiTiter or maybe even microfamiliar microscan. But those panels are not considered reference broth because they're not frozen. We're using a lyophilized tray and then reconstituting it with water, deionized water. So the reference broth frozen panels, they tended to be the most reproducible and had the best reproducibility. So that is the only method that CLSI is currently recommending for testing. However, we removed the breakpoints so there's still no interpretations. You're going to be able to get an MIC from your reference broth microdilution tray, but you won't be able to have an interpretation to go along with it. And then subsequent to that, because we dropped the breakpoints, there's always concern, well, what am I going to do with this MIC? What does this MIC actually mean? So epidemiologic cutoff values, or ECVs, were established. They're reported in the appendix of the M100. We did establish them for several of the drugs that were up in tables 2. And ECVs just tell you where the wild type cutoff is versus the non-wild type cutoff. They're not to be used for clinical therapeutic decisions. They're just there to describe the population of bacteria, whether it's wild type or non-wild type. And that was sort of the best that was we were able to do with the data that was presented to the subcommittee and voted on. I think a question that remains for both us and for all our users is, where can we get reference broth microdilution? trays. And so, you know, a straw poll at the meeting from some of our reference laboratories were like, no, we're using lyophilized trays, or we're using commercial panels, or we're using agar dilution. And so, you know, still early in this year, we're unaware of a reference lab that is performing broth microdilution. They are all aware of this issue. And so it does not mean that they're not currently working on a way of getting reference broth microdilution for Burkholderia dairy-sepatia complex. But that's still to be determined. And so our best recommendation to users is to contact your reference lab and ask them what method they're doing, and maybe see if they have any plans for bringing it on. I mean, you could always be ambitious and bring it on in your own lab as well. And there is the Silsci M100 or M07 that has broth microdilution procedure for performing it. So,
well, thank you for that. And that's interesting. So I didn't know that UCAS had done that before already. So okay, so basically you answered all the questions that I had regarding this. So thank you for that. So as of right now, contact your reference lab, and so we're not quite sure where they can, you know, where they can get them for now. And okay. So in the meantime, if you have susceptibilities, then like if they're requesting them, then so what do we do?
Yeah, so our recommendation is often, or luckily we don't isolate Burkholderia sepatia complex too often in our lab. So every couple times a year, I probably similar to other institutions across the country. It's not as like a Staph aureus or E. coli where we're getting it quite often. So in the event that you do isolate, especially from a sterile site, like a blood, if this is like a Lyme infection and an immunocompromised patient, our recommendation first is to say that, you know, routine susceptibility testing is unable to be performed due to poor correlation of results with clinical outcome, and then please contact the lab. And then that gets you into the conversation of trying to explain, you know, why this happened, what options are there, what limited options we do have, and to kind of, you know, see, really talk about the need for it, whether or not they can use any like empiric therapy to go off of, and have sort of a conversation that way. We are currently limited, like I said, in a reproducible method. That is a difficult conversation to have. I, you know, sometimes I get glazed eyes over and saying, I just need a result, and not understanding the technical problems that we face in the lab, that it's not, it just doesn't work, you know? And so hopefully we won't have these conversations too often, but at the current moment, we're recommending not to report out these results. Especially with interpretations.
Okay. Well, yeah, and definitely it makes me curious, because I know that like in my facility, we get, you know, it's not as rare. Like we do tend to get some, and of course, you know, I'm planning on asking my director and things like that and talking, but so I was curious about that. Okay. So what are some other changes that have happened this year?
Mm-hmm. So I guess we also revised the minocycline and Acinetobacter baumannii or Acinetobacter species breakpoint. So we decreased the MIC from a susceptibility of 4 down to 1, and also revised the distribution breakpoints for minocycline and Acinetobacter species. And we removed the breakpoints for doxycycline and tetracycline, just due to, again, poor correlation and limited contemporary data to support that breakpoint. And Mino is the drug of choice for treatment. So that was new for the Acinetobacter species table. And this year, we actually had no new drugs added to the table. So there's no new breakpoints from new drug manufacturers in the document, just the revision and then the deletion this year. Other big changes is our QC working group did a large overhaul looking at frequency of QC testing, and removed the words that we normally would say daily or weekly to then daily or IQCP. So really the idea behind this is to allow labs a lot more flexibility with performing their QC testing. So they're not, if they do a very robust IQCP and have enough data to support, they can go to less frequent testing, so less than weekly, if the IQCP supports it. So they can go down to monthly or biweekly, or we recommend you could also, if you have multiple analyzers, you can, you know, switch your QC strains across analyzers over a course of a whole month. If you were doing daily QC, maybe you weren't setting it up too often and you wanted to move to weekly or to monthly, just looking at your overall QC data and formulating a IQC plan, you can reduce that frequency. We also encouraged users to more broadly think about the QC strains they might want to include in their testing. So we removed the recommendations that were up in tables to the boxes. So the QC recommendations just say, you know, follow your manufacturer's instructions if you're using a commercial assay, or if there are no prescriptive QC strains, if you're doing reference broth microdilution or disk diffusion and they don't have recommendations, to then use your tables 4 and 5 in the M100 document. So just the idea was really to allow more flexibility for our users in terms of QC. So that was like a big change. In my webinar, I spoke a lot about the QC changes for that. As an outreach working group, we're going to put forth more education around the QC and some like quick guides, as well as some examples of IQC plans to help users navigate that. It's not a requirement. So if your QC is working just fine the way you have it, like just keep on going. It works well. It's really for labs that may feel that their QC plan may be overburdening or too time consuming, and they realize there could be room for improvement, but obviously not compromising quality, but just being a little bit more flexible. So that was a big change to the document this year. So you'll see some things that have been removed, like those QC strains, and they're no longer there. Doesn't mean like they're no longer relevant. I think sometimes that's like a misnomer with our document, like remove things because they're not relevant or not unable to be used, such as like the clinical breakpoints, like please don't use them. And then there's times that removes things from the document that they're still very relevant and that you could still use them, like the QC strains, like they work just fine. And you can certainly go back to your archive documents and use them for guidance. So I think that part doesn't always get communicated clearly of why things get removed from the document, either because they truly don't work or we're just kind of streamlining the document and removing extraneous information. So that the QC is part on that side.
Just real quick regarding this, because you mentioned, so for this like working group and working on some examples of our QCPs and things like that, is it something that eventually like it will get posted on the CLSI website when this happens, or will be like maybe a webinar or something like that?
Yeah, so that is absolutely the intention, is to post all the IQCP and QC resources up on the CLSI website. However, everything that does get posted on our website has to be approved by our like subcommittee and CLSI staff members. So when we have that ready to go, it will be published up on the website. So I should also say we also are trying to put out some quick guides for Burkholderia and patient complex as well. So there'll be some guidance on our website for that too. We were, of course, hoping to have more information on reference testing because that's the number one question we're going to get, is where can we send our isolates?
So. Yeah, well, that regarding the QC, it's, I feel like maybe that's because, you know, you mentioned that maybe some places might, if you know, the QC maybe feels like a burden. I think that sometimes, you know, it does feel like that, and because of the amount, and you know, like in my facility, the weekly QC, it's, you know, it takes you like the whole day between doing all the things that you're doing, and then on top of that you have daily. So maybe some of those changes can be implemented. I think that, and as you said, of course, you know, without compromising the quality, then it might be a good, something positive for the lab, where maybe you can allocate the time of the technologists towards maybe, you know, reading cultures or doing other things that then they are free to do that. Okay. So, so please continue. What other changes have happened?
Changes occur two ways, like one through our working group. So our methods working group, we put in changes around carbapenemase testing. So we really want to encourage laboratories that if they have a carbapenem resistant Enterobacterales, that it's really important to know the mechanism of carbapenemase. At the very least, know that they're making a carbapenemase, and if even better, if we know which carbapenemase it's making, like a class A versus class B versus class D. So we strengthened our language in Table 2A to really emphasize that we really want to be looking for the carbapenemase, but it's even better if you know what the gene is or the gene product is to help direct therapy. So that change came through to look for like the KPC or the NDM. And then we have other changes in our document that come in through CLSI customers will ask questions regarding our document, usually around clarification of language or clarification of comments. And also during text and tables review, we'll have many of our own members review the document and say, oh, I think we really need to update this section. It's, you know, there's changes that have been made or things that need to be clarified. And so those were two of our comments. We updated our members of the staff aureus complex comment. So this comment is in Table 2C, general comment. And I kind of looked back to the history of this. And so I think it was around 2020. So it was the 31st edition published in 2021, where we first included staff argentis and switzeri, which are members of the staph aureus complex. And so we put that in the comment and said, if you were to identify argentis in your via MALDI or 16S sequence, there has been data to show that is, you know, similar to staph aureus in terms of susceptibility testing. You can use the same breakpoints. You can still use the oxacillin and the suffoxitin to predict the MSSA or MRSA, so in that part of the complex. Also at that time, switzeri was also identified as part of the staph aureus complex. However, that species has not been isolated in humans. And more recently, it has been associated as like colonization in humans who have interacted with like primates or bats. So again, not a clinical isolate that we would recover quite often, but it was kind of put into that group. And so there was no data of whether or not that species, we could use the same methods, such as the oxacillin, suffoxitin, and the same breakpoints as the staph aureus for the switzeri. And then most recently, two new species got added to the complex, both identified in foot wounds. One identified some Singapore, and so it got the name Staph singaporensis, and the other one identified at a Rotterdam. So I'm not even going to pronounce that other one, but that's where it originated from. And so this was brought to our attention. It was like, well, how do we address all these newer species being identified in Staph aureus complex? And so we kind of just updated our comment to say that at this time, we have not evaluated any of the other species with the methods published in this document. This is actually also consistent with the UCAS also set, you know, as a similar comment. The one difference is they actually list out all the coag positive or all the staph aureus complex species, whereas we just kind of say any other species that's not staph aureus or argentis or switzeri, and then any other new ones that may come about. We can't really predict how those methods are going to work for those newer species. The question that comes up is like, well, what happens when I do identify one of them? And probably the best recommendation we can give is doing like a PB2A or a MECA gene. Obviously, it'd be off, you know, maybe off label because it's a species that not have been identified or not been characterized, but at least then you would know if it's oxicillin resistant or not. And so kind of go from there. But that was sort of a new, and we got some questions regarding that. It's tough during the webinar when you only have a few seconds to talk about a slide. So that was a change. And then another change that came in through our users was our tetracycline prediction comment. And this comment's actually not new. It has been in the document for a really, really long time. And what we really ended up doing was just changing the second sentence that says, what do I do when my tetracycline is resistant? So now I can't predict doxy or minnow from tetra because my tetra is resistant. And it's basically saying, if you're going to need the doxy for treatment or the minnow for treatment, then you must go on to test the doxycycline alone or the minocycline alone. I think that part wasn't as clear as it could have been. And that was the part we tried to make clearer, that if you're tetra resistant, it doesn't mean you automatically have to go test a minnow right away. It's only if your provider is saying, I want to use minocycline, is this susceptible or not? And then you would have to then reflex to a secondary method if it's not on your primary panel, which I think is usually an issue. What we have is that we only have tetracycline on our panel, and then you have to go either to an e-test or a disc diffusion or a possible send out if you don't have that drug. So it's just really clarifying that if the tetra is resistant, it does not predict to the other two tetracyclines within that class, and therefore you have to test them individually. And so not a new comment, but just a clarification to that comment.
Yeah, and that comment is something that actually that I reference to a lot when I'm doing the AMR series as we're going through the different categories. I always ask, the guests if I use that as an example because, sometimes you do get that request in the lab and you're not sure of what to do or it's like maybe we'll check the tetracycline first. And so it's the wording then. Okay. Now one question. So regarding this, however, for eravacycline, that cannot be applied to that? So if your tetracycline is susceptible, can eravacycline be considered susceptible?
Yeah, that's a good question. I thought about that. And it's a different subclass of tetracyclines. So I would equate it to sort of like the tigecycline, which is also a different subclass. And we don't use tetra to predict tigecycline, so we don't use tetra to predict eravacycline either. It's just its own standalone drug designed for MDR, organisms. And so it we wouldn't be able to use tetra to predict.
Thank you for that. Okay. we're talking about the M100 and we get yearly updates, and I was just wondering, and maybe if you can talk about this, but like the CLSI M45 has not been updated in many years. What are the reasons for this? I'm just curious, and I'm sure that a lot of people in the audience are as well.
So the good news is that there is a working group. They've been working really hard over the last several years on the M45 document. It is slated to come out, I believe, in 2026. So not this year, but next year. They continue to give the subcommittee updates on it. So I know they've made several changes. They've expanded some disc diffusion breakpoints now, because many of those isolates, those organism types only had MICs. I believe they also expanded some of the organisms in the document as well. So it is soon to come out. We've all been long awaiting it, because I found over the years, we isolate these fastidious organisms way more often. I think the title is infrequently isolated and fastidious organisms, and many of them are not infrequently isolated anymore. They're pretty frequent, especially Carinibacterium. We isolate that every single day from all sources. And so definitely a long await, but we have about, maybe 6 to 12 more months before it comes out. Yeah, actually more like 12 more months.
Okay, that is great to hear. So there you have it for the audience. And yeah, as you said, they're not, we also, we isolate those a lot, and we get a lot of, we get Pastorella, we get Aerococcus. We get requests for that. So we use the M45 a lot in my lab. So it's, you know, it's like, as you look at the M100 and you see yearly updates, and this one, it's been since 2016. And as I always like to remind the audience that you can access these documents online, and the M100 and the M45, they're actually free. If you go to a search engine of your choice and you type something as simple as free CLSI, and then you follow the things, now you have to sign up with an email, and it lets you look at the documents. That way you don't have to keep getting up to the binder and getting it to your bench, and you can just set it on your computer as you're working and make things a little bit easier. Okay, are there any other, I know that, you know, as you said, we know with the webinar, you have a limited amount of time, and sometimes some questions get left over. Is there anything else that you feel that maybe should have been addressed at the webinar, but there was no time? Anything else?
I think, we added this slide in last minute, and it relates to the M100 and M45, is that now the FDA STIC website fully recognizes the M100 35th edition and the M45 edition. So it certainly helps labs with the issue of having discordant breakpoints between FDA and CLSI. So for almost many of the drugs now, FDA recognizes CLSI M100 or M45. So that is like huge news for most labs. There are still some exceptions. I think probably the most notable exception is the aminoglycosides. There's still FDA breakpoints for the aminoglycosides and Enterobacterales, where they differ from the CLSI breakpoints. But for most of the drugs, they're very similar now, which helps with validating drugs on your, or updating breakpoints on your panels and stuff, so they're aligned and not considered to be off-label from FDA. I think, we covered this in the webinar, but another thing I think was important was removed fluoroquinolones from the CSF warning box. So that certainly comes into play in your testing and reporting requirements when you're reporting out antimicrobials from CSF isolates. You can now report out fluoroquinolone if needed. And so that's a change for laboratories, especially that have certain rules written into their LIS or into their AST systems, that these drugs, the fluoroquinolones, can now come across on a CSF isolate. That was a newer change as well. In terms of like time, probably we tend to cover it, every single thing that we can. We just go through really fast. And so, like I said, we covered a lot of the questions we got from Sapatia. We received many questions on IQCP and QC. I guess the highlight there is that I spoke about automated systems just because that's what the majority of labs are using as an automated system. But this QC change is for both automated and non-automated. So like I said, if you were doing just diffusion, if you were doing broth microdilution in your lab, reference broth, the QC frequency applies to that as well. We also mentioned that we refer to disk diffusion as a standard method, which it is. It was previously listed as a reference method. It's still currently listed as a reference method in MO2 disk diffusion, but in reality, it's a correlate to the reference method, and the reference method is broth microdilution. So in the M100, we removed our language referring to disk diffusion as a reference method and only as a standard method. It doesn't mean that you can't still use it in your laboratory. You certainly can still, if it's validated, it's a valid test in the lab. It can still be used to validate a new automated system or compare or use as a comparator to your new automated system. It's just not considered a reference method, like a gold standard reference method. And so that was some very subtle language in the document that was updated. So I wanted to kind of highlight that as well.
Okay. Well, this has definitely been great, and I hope the audience enjoys it too. And I'll put the link on the show notes to the CLSI website and also to the M100. So if you're not familiar with, you're able to do that, then you can click the link and check it out, and at your own pace, look at all the things. I have to say that it was visually shocking when you when you saw the whole Burkhold area, like everything was gone, and then all you have is like the commons. Yeah, so it was something like, I don't know. Anyway, well, before we wrap up the episode, is there anything else that you want to talk about or tell the audience?
No, I think we kind of covered everything. It's definitely touched on all the highlights. I wish I had more information on Burkhold Area's Sapacia Complex, but definitely keep your eyes open for the CLSI website. We'll probably be putting up a quick guide for that. And definitely check out some of the recent publications for more in-depth detail about the performance of the broth marker dilution, the disk diffusion testing. And I certainly feel like there's probably more to come on this. And I anticipate some more information coming out from CLSI.
Well, April, you know, it has been great. And thank you so much for taking the time to be in Let's Talk Micro.
My pleasure. Thank you.
My pleasure. And that, my dear audience, is the end of this episode. I hope you enjoyed this episode on the updates from the latest edition of the CLSI M100, the 35th edition. As always, I enjoy sharing this information with you. And shout out to the CLSI and Dr. April Bobinchuk for being a guest in the podcast again. And they're so great. The CLSI is so great. You know, this is the second time that I have requests to do an episode. And they're always, you know, so helpful. So thank you so much. You are doing such great work. So for the audience, as always, stay tuned. Great things coming your way. Thank you so much for the support. And please, continue bringing that passion to what you do. It's so important. You do such great work. So as always, stay motivated. Stay safe. And of course, continue talking micro. Until the next time. Bye.